Hello and welcome. You're tuned into the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. A little later on in the show, a brand new theater of the mind. And tonight we're going to be revisited by a guest, which is kind of funny considering the topic we're going to cover with grief dreams and bereavement dreams, dreams after loss, dreams of the deceased, visitation dreams, whatever name you prefer. These dreams occur after the death of someone, human or animal. And our guest this evening is Joshua Black. Joshua, thank you for joining us again tonight.
Well, thank you for having me on.
I know you were with us about a year ago. I think it was when I was going through the loss of my mother, and Tim was filling in quite a bit on the show, hosting. So for newer listeners that may have just jumped on board and are not as familiar with you, let's get a little bit of your background on this. Where did your interest come in this part of the whole supernatural genre, the whole idea of grief dreams, bereavement dreams, visitations?
Yeah, all that stuff. I don't really feel it was by choice, you know. The big thing that happened was my father passed away when I was my last year of university. And it really like shook me to my core. And I didn't really know what grief was. And I was having a really hard time dealing with it. And then what happened was 3 months later, I had this beautiful dream of being able to say goodbye to my father, telling him that I loved him because he died very suddenly. And when I woke up, all that stuff that I was carrying before sort of was gone. And I started like feeling that joy again, and life was good. And it was just very weird. But I didn't tell anyone about the dream. I didn't really know what I was, you know, really going to do in life still. And then I just kept moving forward. And what happened was I wanted to help people, and with that I decided to help the bereaved. And they started talking about these dreams that they had, which were kind of similar to mine, very comforting. Other times they were negative, and other people were just saying they wanted dreams because people in their family had them and they were kind of jealous. And so, like, being a good academic at that time, I'm like, I want to figure this stuff out. I'm more intrigued now. And when I looked at the research, there was really nothing there. Nothing could help them. And just the way life works, I was like, okay, I'm going to actually look into this, or I want to look into this. And so there's a university close by that was actually, and one of the researchers there, one of the professors there, studies dreams. So I went up to her and I said, hey, like, I want to study these, you know, grief dreams. And she was excited about it. And so that's how it all started. But it wasn't until I really got into this topic that I saw the world that I never knew about, all the problems, all the judgments people get in this area, and all the paranormal stuff that comes along with it. And yeah, I can't wait to share some of the stuff and some of the dreams, because I still have a hard time understanding it all, but it's so common that I'm like, it just can't be by chance.
I am fascinated by this. As I've talked on the show, I've had a visitation dream or two throughout my life. And it's fascinating. I also am, for newer listeners, I had a very strange experience a number of years ago. I think it was about 5 years ago. I went in for a sleep study. Mm-hmm. And I just shooting the breeze with some of the employees. After my sleep study was over, I asked him, I said, so you're here overnight dealing with this. Do you ever see and hear weird things? And the couple of the technicians kind of looked at each other sideways, and then they were looking at me like, I don't know if you're pulling my leg. I don't know if we should be honest. I don't know where to go with this. I said, listen, this is who I am. I host a radio show. I've been on ghost shows. I don't know if that's frightening you off from telling me it at all or not, but I'm just curious. I would think there could be some weird stuff here. The guy goes, you have no idea. And I said, really, what can you tell me? And he goes, well, you know, a lot of this stuff, we're looking for sleep apnea and sleep disturbances, people that are having issues in their sleep. He goes, there's been times when the person in the room will begin, they're in deep REM sleep, we can see it, and they begin speaking to somebody, and we start hearing a voice respond.
Oh, that's crazy.
And he said, and we've gone in the room, reluctantly, looked around, and there's no one there. there's also been times where they're watching and they have video cameras in the halls and so on and so forth. And in one of the instances, he said, so I'm looking around and I happen to glance over and I see the hall and I see our patient shuffling down the hall and walks into the bathroom. And I thought, oh, crap, we got to go rewire him all up. We've got to do this. We got to do that. And then he turns and looks at the screen and the guy's still in his room sleeping.
Oh, interesting.
And he looks back at the camera in the hall and looks back at the guy sleeping. And he's like, I just saw this guy walking down the hall into the bathroom. So his other friend comes in. He goes, hey, go do me a favor. Go check the bathroom in hall 3. I want to make sure that somebody didn't just walk in there. And he goes, oh, okay, no problem. And he goes down there and he watches him go down the hall exact same way, walks into the bathroom. Nope, nobody here. He goes, okay, great. Comes back and then tells his partner what he saw. So here it is, this dream study lab, where they're just trying to find out if you have sleep apnea or what it is bothering you. And I said, well, how do you respond when you realize that they're having these nights where they're not able to sleep or they're waking up more exhausted, and it's because they're having conversations with something in their room? What's your response? He goes, apnea. And I go, well, is it truly apnea? And they both kind of laugh and they go, I don't know what the hell to call it. So we just refer to it as a lower form of apnea. And we all had a good laugh over that, but it was just, it was so intriguing to me to kind of lock into this. And here you've got, if we have listeners out there that are sleep study technicians, email me your stories if you've had any encounters. Dave@darknessradio.com. We may use them on a future Theater of the Mind. Dave@darknessradio.com. But it is interesting, isn't it, Joshua, that in this sleep state, our brain is going through the machinations of whatever we're working on from the day. We're trying to work out problems. We're trying to work through good things, bad things, grief. So it's not above the normal for our body to and our voices to be heard and things to happen as though we believe we're living that actual moment, right? I mean, that's all a normal part of the sleep study or sleep.
Yeah, like when it comes to the dreams, right? And the dreams we remember, when we're having those dreams, we don't know they're dreams. And they could be so bizarre, but you think it's just, you know, this is how it's supposed to be. And so, yeah, it's very interesting what goes on. And we don't know, we know some stuff about, you know, sleep and the mind, but there's so much we don't know. And I think these dreams people have after loss is, I think, a big window into the mystery of, you know, who we are as humans.
When you had the dream with your father, how do you differentiate that dream, aside from it being your father and you had a chance to talk to him and say goodbye, how was it any different than any other dream that you have?
Well, most other dreams, there's just, I guess the biggest thing, there's a feeling. And actually, there's two things, a feeling. And for me, I was in my bedroom and I saw him across the way, and everything in my room was exactly the same as it was. I never had a dream like that before where everything was crystal clear and it was as if I was like in my room in waking life. So that was the first thing. And the other one was just a feeling. And I knew he was dead because I said I missed him and I'm going to miss him, acknowledging his loss. But there was a feeling that came with the dream that was different than other dreams I've previously had. And I think that is the key thing. A lot of people say it's more real than real. It's more vivid than they've ever had. Mm-hmm. And you don't really get that a lot. Sometimes people will say that with maybe more precog dreams and stuff like that. But for a lot of people, like, they're not into that stuff, but they have this dream and it changes them. Like, something occurs at that moment. And when they wake up, they like, there's usually a knowing. And when people ask me, I always get the question, it's like, is my dream a visitation? And I always say, like, I can't tell you that. But what I can say is just go with your gut feeling on whatever you think. And as long as it's coming from a positive space, because there's people who sometimes think negative dreams are visitations, and we can talk about that. But it's the positive dreams that if it's helping facilitate your grief, why not? Because I think there's a lot of stories out there that give credibility to that sort of side with the things I hear.
The vividness, the lucidity of these dreams, did your father seem conscious of the fact that he knew you were aware that this was kind of a, that this was a dream state?
I don't know if he knew. He knew, like, he had a different kind of, like, look to him. Like, he was at peace. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like in waking life, he was more tormented by, you know, I guess, you know, old demons and stuff and, you know, past traumas. But like this one, he felt like healthy, fresh. Yeah, like I think another dream that Moore, I think, looks at that was when I was, it was probably about 2 years after that, I had a dream where it was me and him in the same room. And he basically took my hand. He looked at me and said, I've been waiting a long time to give you this. And then he took my hand and he basically put his hand on top of mine. And then this energy came from him and went into me. And I think at that, in that dream last, felt like it lasted like 10 hours. But at that moment, I could tell like he, I felt, knew he was dead in the sense of like he was in a spirit form and he was passing something on, energy or whatever that was. I still don't know. But it was a very interesting dream that was different than other dreams I've had, because usually the dreams I have with them are very short. And like this one, it was very short, you know, probably 30 seconds. Most people have really short dreams. But forever, this one, it felt like it took like 10 hours.
The consciousness level of the visitation, right? When that was what set it apart for me. I remember the fact of when I saw my grandfather approaching, I remember physically, mentally, spiritually saying, oh, I'm about to talk to a dead person. I remember that clearly. That's what stuck out to me. And I remember thinking as well, he's coming from the back house and taking his time to walk here so I can process this instead of just beep, appearing in front of me. And I remember having this thought process through. I couldn't tell you what I did yesterday, Joshua, right? Okay. My mind is just polluted with garbage I need to get rid of. But I have this memory more clear than I've had, you know, the memories of yesterday. And to me, that's what made it kind of stand out. But it was also the knowing and the information. Now, one thing that my grandfather, during our discussion, and I did a Theater of the Mind on this a few weeks ago, and had I known I was going to be speaking with you, I would have kept it for this episode. But one thing I left out of the Theater of the Mind, one of the attributes of it that was most fascinating to me, was when I was talking to my grandfather about death and the afterlife. And he had said, I'll answer any questions you have. And he did.
Oh, wow.
And he was very clear and succinct about it. And I had asked, you know, my question was, well, you know, grandma was there to meet you. And he said, yeah. And I said, well, what's going to happen when Noelle, your second wife, dies? And you could see he was like trying to process where I was going with this question. And I said, well, yeah. You know, I mean, if you're with grandma now, who's going to be there with, you know, second grandma? And he started laughing and he goes, well, we'll all be here to greet her, you know, her parents and her, her relatives. And he also mentions, and her two husbands that preceded her in death.
Oh, wow.
Now that was something I never knew. And it was a throwaway line that I didn't think much about until I talked to my mom about this. And I said, yeah, he told me this, this, and this. And then he said that she'd be there with her other two husbands that preceded her in death. Did Noelle have two other husbands? She's like, yeah. And then we all joked around. I'm like, oh, my God, was Noelle a black widow? What is this, you know? she has three now dead husbands? What are the chances of that? My grandfather died of cancer, so we know that she had nothing to do with that. But it was just, it was very strange but surreal. But there was that moment, that thing that didn't even really stand out to me as part of it. Until later, that it was like, there's the corroboration that this was more than just a dream. Right. I was given a tidbit of information that I could take back and unwrap later that made that holy shit minute even more impactful.
Yeah, and I think that's amazing because you're right. It gives you, because there's always that part of your mind that wants to be critical and judge it
right.
And say, you know, like, hey, there's got to be a reason, like a logical reason for this. But then when you get that information, you don't know. You're like, wait a second.
See, I'm still brutal and kick my butt about it because I'll sit there and I still question. And I'm like, hey, man, the mind works in fascinating ways to try to deal with grief and the pain of loss. So are these dreams truly spiritual visitations? And I've kind of waffled on many different things, but I'm curious, in the first dream that you had with your father, Joshua, if you don't mind probing a little deeper.
No.
Was there any physical contact between you and your father?
Yes, we hugged.
Okay.
And
now, explain this to me. Was it the normal tactile feeling of hugging your father, or was there something different about it?
Probably the difference was the love that was probably emanating from him.
Okay.
Because usually in waking life, you know, that was something we never really got to do. And he didn't really like show, like he was like a man's man. He didn't really showcase a lot of love. But at that moment, I felt that he was giving me a lot of love. Like he was almost free, you know, and that's something I never felt with him. And I'd say once I hugged him, that was the moment I woke up too. So it wasn't like a long lasting hug, but yeah, at the end of the day, like he was a different being is the best way to put it.
All right. That's
I would know him. Yeah.
That's what I was looking for, a different being, because we're a very huggy family. My grandfather was a man's man as well. World War II veteran and a construction worker, but we were a huggy, lovey family. And when he finally had to say his goodbyes and I reached my arms out to hug him and he hugged me, I felt like I grabbed a shaft of blowing, hot, vibrating air. It was like electric. And I jerked back and he goes, "Oh, I'm sorry, you're not used to that here. All right, now." And I hugged him again and then I could feel every sensation of shirt and skin and bone, and I could feel there was a human form there. And that stuck with me as well. And I was left with that. I was like, what the hell was that? what, you know, well, I mean, I guess if he was nothing more than an energetic form, and that's what I did, right? It's like sticking your hand into static electricity. You're going to get that little crackling and zip and a pop. And that's what I felt. Wow. But but it's interesting that you said he was a different being, because now when you saw him, not only this look of peace and kind of just tranquility over him now, but did he look, I don't know, would you say that he looked younger, that he looked like he was coming from a healthier place in his life as opposed to the end of how you recalled your father?
Yeah, like I would say, because he died when he was 52, so he died pretty young. But he would probably be around like 45-ish, 40, 45.
Okay.
Yeah, so, but like I know exactly where you're going, because I hear this all the time, where if someone dies when they're older, people have these dreams of them when they're younger in their healthier state, or if they've, let's say they had cerebral palsy, or they were just, you know, they're in a wheelchair before they died, they're coming back and they're walking and there's nothing wrong. And so there's like this feel of being like they're healthy and they're in their prime state or prime age when you know them. I haven't really seen many, if you lose an adult, that they increase in age, you know, like they would in waking life. But I should mention that I looked at when it comes to people who lose kids. So let's say you lose someone, a child at age two. What's very interesting is there's a common trend that in 2 years, you're going to see them at age four and then six. You know, like as they age in waking life, like they would have aged, that's how you're seeing them in the dream world. And I think that is very interesting. So you don't really, it's different because you haven't really known them as a 40-year-old or a 20-year-old. So they're almost aging as they would have in front of you. And I think that's really interesting because it's really different. Yeah.
Yeah, that is. That's a different aspect of this. Now, the grieving process, though, when you hear these things, and I understand you're trying to be delicate to the situation, and I do that as well in my state with doing the radio show, and I get people asking all the time, do you believe this was really him or her or them? I have no way of knowing. You and I, it's guesswork at best. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, I look for telltale signs in the dream, you know, and if it's just that you're in a dream and you're playing baseball and you see the old man walk by and give you a wave, that doesn't feel as visitation to me as some of these dreams. It's more like you and I have had these one-on-ones where it's definitely, this was a meeting. This was something that was beyond just seeing somebody in a dream state, that your mind just might be flipping through the mental Rolodex and making a motion picture out of a bunch of pictures in your brain, right?
Yeah, it's very interesting when it comes to what is a visitation dream, because I've seen so many, and I've, you know, in the beginning of sort of my career doing this stuff and researching this topic, I had like, okay, like there, you know, this was going to be one, this one's not. But, you know, what I'm finding is that when I just ask the person, you know, what do you feel it's one? They say yes. I'm like, well, then that's great. Like, you don't, you're asking me for validation, but you already have your validation. And if it is someone waving at them, that a lot of people will say that's a visitation dream. And I say, hey, if it allows you to feel, continue to feel loved and that they're okay, man, like continue believing that, because I've seen so many like that you have the one-on-one, but I also seen like dream diaries where it changes from being one-on-one in the beginning of loss to more they're in the background of dreams, but they're still healthy and they can wave and stuff. But it's almost as if you don't need that one-on-one anymore. You know, like they can still be almost like they're still around, but you're just not in that grieving process like you would in the beginning where you needed that one-on-one. You know, and so like that's why I'm very cautious to say when someone's dreams of visitation, I say, you know, were they healthy? Like, what does it feel to you? And if they say, well, it feels like one, then say, oh, cool. You know, that's great. You know, I'm happy for that. Let's talk more about this dream. Let's talk about your loss. And that's how sort of I move through that. But a lot of people do, like, they almost need validation for something I think they already truly know.
What do you do for people that are not having these dreams? Why does one brother have it and the other brother doesn't?
Hey, now you're talking about my research. Great.
Right. Yep. I knew we'd get to there sometime.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, in my master's, I was just looking at common themes. So this is what I sort of just, you know, what are people even dreaming? And so I was lucky enough to actually now do my PhD at Brock University. And I'm in my last year. And I just recently finished the study. And it's actually in a journal just waiting to be accepted for publication. But anyways, what I looked at is what factors predict dreaming of the deceased? Because I kept getting this over and over again. Why, you know, how come I'm not having these dreams? I want these dreams. Are they okay? Right. So now you start, you know, I started seeing these, the bereaved complicate their grief because they weren't having these dreams. And so some people were saying that maybe they didn't cross over. Maybe they went to hell, right? Like maybe if in hell you can't, you know, you can't come back in a dream or something. Other people said, oh, maybe, you know, they're mad at me and they're holding back their visit because, you know, I had to sell the home because there's a lot of stuff that goes on, you know, when someone dies and they can't afford things anymore. Other times, like maybe they just forgot about me. Like maybe the afterlife is like they'll go with their ex-wife or whatever, right? Like they'll just, you know, they'll find something else to do. And so they're, what I'm seeing from them was they're complicating their grief. And so I was like, there's got to be a scientific explanation for this. And so I went and I looked at, you know, the grief. I looked at personality, like openness to experience, a personality trait. I looked at attachment style. And then I looked at dream recall to sort of see what's going on. Can any of these factors explain this? And what I found was actually very interesting. So the only unique predictor of all those variables was dream recall. And so what it's saying is that people who remember more dreams are more likely to remember these dreams. And that happened in after spousal loss. So we did a study of spousal loss. And we also did one after pet loss. And it had the same sort of data that was coming up. And so it goes to the theory that we're probably dreaming about the deceased all the time. But it's those people who can remember their dreams that have a higher probability of remembering one of those dreams. I think that's key. So it takes the burden off them that, you know, that they're not visiting you or that they're not doing whatever, that you're just probably not remembering the dream that you probably had when you were sleeping.
But that sounds, and I'm not trying to dismiss your research on this, but doesn't that sound convenient? That's like a good out, right? Hey, it's like a good psychic. Well, I could be wrong. I could be right. And maybe you just don't know about this aspect yet. And then that's kind of the way they leave you. You know, you would think though, if Dave had a very detailed, very vivid memory dream of it, then why didn't Carol, you know, same so grandchild.
You can like same people in the family, but if their dream recall is different, that can be a huge thing. And so there's different ways to increase your dream recall. So like if I look at my family, I'm the only one that really remembers my dreams like almost all the time. My brothers, sisters, my mom, they don't remember their dreams that often. And so, you know, like, and none of them have stated they've had a dream of my father. And so you wonder why, you know, but it could just be that I've remembered my dreams. I value my dreams. And so if, let's say there is a family and one person had a dream, I would just question, like, is the other person remembering dreams frequently? And so, like, at the end of the day, I remember about one dream a night. A lot of people, the average is around 1 to 2 a week. But that's one thing you can do if you're not, because you don't understand how many people have come up to me and said, I want a dream, I'm not having any of these dreams. Like, what's going on? And I say, how often do you dream? And they say, you know, maybe once a month. I'm like, well, that's probably the issue, because if you're dreaming, so your dream recall is so frequent, what are the odds of picking up one of those dreams?
But they are dreaming more often. They're just only having recall once a month.
Yeah, that's right. Everyone's dreaming throughout sleep, and this is the fascinating thing. Like, why are we remembering all our dreams? You know, because we're dreaming in non-REM and REM, and so you think, but if you're sleeping 8 hours, you're probably dreaming about four of those. But yet you're only remembering maybe, what, a one-minute clip when you wake up? And so there's different ways to increase dream recall, you know, which is valuing your dreams, talking about them more often, keeping a dream diary. And like, I remember when I started doing that, I increased from one a night to like five a night. And so it is possible to increase. So that's the way I would go at first, to sort of see, can you pick up one of those dreams? And, you know, beyond that, and, you know, so the research is still pretty new, but let's say there's two people with the same kind of recall, and why is one having a dream and the other's not? That is a mystery. Or the other big thing is, let's say you're dreaming of one deceased. So this is a better example. So there's one person who dreams of one of their deceased relatives, but not another. And so they have the same recall frequency, right? Because it's the same person. But they're only dreaming of one person, not the other. And when I come across that, I always look at, you know, what's different among the stories. Because sometimes the people, I had one individual on my podcast, and she had dreams of all of her other relatives except her deceased mother. And when you actually questioned her, she said, you know, she didn't actually want to have a dream of her mother because it would make it more real. Just the way she died and the whole story around it, the mother died as a child, and she was avoiding the reality of the loss. And only recently has she actually went to the gravesite. And so it could just be an avoidance thing, how the mind doesn't want you remember it just because it knows it would disturb you when you woke up. So it's like the research is so new that there's so many questions we can ask, but that is definitely something to, as I move forward, I want to continue to investigate, because when it comes to family members or even the same person, what is those factors that actually will help produce that? And not only when it comes to, because we're talking a lot about these positive dreams, so my research just looked at dreams in general. So some dreams are positive, neutral, and we're just looking at the frequency of that. But when you're talking more of those, you know, those visitation type dreams, or those dreams that just, you know, transform you, why can't everyone get those? And, you know, that's a huge mystery, because people who want these dreams, they want the positive ones that basically, you know, give them that has that transformational quality that feels different.
That attaboy moment, right?
Yeah, that you don't forget, you know, because a lot of these dreams, you know, like, you forget your dreams usually soon after you wake up, but these dreams, they can last for the lifetime, and you just remember in perfect detail. And, like, what's going on, like, for the person in that moment?
And so do you think we could be psychologically blocking ourselves in the sense that, let's say, Mary wants to dream about her mother that she lost. Mm-hmm. And she was very close and loved her mother. But do you think that there could be fears that she has that she let her mom down? Or, God, you know, after mom died, I remembered that time we had a big fight and I punched her or slapped her or did something that you might think would be devastating to a relationship. Do you think that that might end up throwing up kind of an iron veil so that they don't allow themselves to have that dream for fear? Almost like the idea of when we cross over, when we die, the idea that maybe we don't want to face the judgment. Maybe we don't want to have that one-on-one, because what if I do face my mom and she is disappointed?
Mm. Yeah, I think that could be a definite barrier in the sense of just being afraid of having that moment. And I've seen people tell me that, you know, once, especially like if they had guilt or they're really grieving after that, you know, they worked on that stuff, then they had this dream that they wanted. So it was like, you know, 4 years after the fact, which is, you know, a lot of people have it soon after, but there's these people that it takes 4 years before they get that one. And yeah, it's very interesting to sort of look at that. But I think that would be a possibility.
Griefdreams.ca, that's the website to check out. Griefdreams.ca. You can find more information about Joshua Black, his research, his show. All the information you need is right there on the website. And listen, if you love the guests that you hear on our show and you want to know where you can get their books, you want to know where you can get the DVDs, the documentaries, you want to find some really cool ghost hunting or Bigfoot hunting equipment, you want to find some t-shirts, sweatshirts, cool swag for the holidays, well, we've got the place. Go to darknessradio.com and click on the Killer Deals link. and that'll take you to our Amazon page that we put together. We've hand-selected some really cool items, and we're trying to put up every one of the books that you hear mentioned from our guests on the show, whether they mention it or it's their book specifically. So you can go find all of that under one resource. And here's a great thing. If you go in through that link and you decide you want to keep shopping and find other things that aren't part of our page, as long as you've gone in through that link, every purchase you make, a very small percentage of every purchase you make goes to our show to help it support the streaming fees, the hosting fees, all of the fees that are associated with putting out a podcast 5 days a week, Monday through Friday. So if you can make that purchase, and especially with the holidays right around the corner, you're going to be using Amazon, why not use our killer deals link at darknessradio.com? And every purchase you make going forward, a small portion will go to help out your pals on the show. That's all we're asking. So next time you're ready to buy off Amazon.com, you can go to darknessradio.com, click on the killer deals link, and then bookmark that link so that you can always go back to that quickly and efficiently when you're ready to make your next purchase. Plus, you'll be sponsoring and helping all of the great guests that you here on this show. Stay tuned. We've got more coming your way, but right now we're going to go into a journey. We're going on a journey into the dark hives. It's time for Theater of the Mind. From our listener, Sherry, this is the Wedding Video Voyeur.
My now ex-husband, John, had a father who was, shall we say, the quintessential deadbeat dad. He'd up and left his family when John was just barely out of diapers, giving no excuses as to why, nor providing any in the years to come. Though after dealing with John's mom for more than 10 years, I can pretty much tell you why. But that's a different story for a different show called Dr. Phil or Maury.
You're telling the truth.
Anyways, fast forward 23 years. Y2K had come and gone, and invitations for our fall wedding went out. Though he didn't deserve it, and knowing full well he wouldn't attend, we sent an invitation to John's father in Arizona, basically out of common courtesy. However, what John didn't know was that along with the invitation that went to his father, I included a letter essentially telling my soon-to-be father-in-law that he was essentially a coward and an ass for leaving his family, and that his son, now at the age of 26, didn't need a father, but instead needed and deserved answers to questions that had plagued him for over 2 decades. I didn't expect my words to affect him, but apparently they did, and my deadbeat father-in-law-to-be called his son for the first time in over a decade. The two talked and agreed to meet. That meeting, however, never happened. A month before our wedding, John's father had a massive heart attack and died. Our wedding came and went. John's paternal grandmother, who lived in a podunk town outside of Peoria, Illinois, hadn't been able to attend, so we decided to take a road trip to see her and bring along our wedding video, so she felt like she'd been at least a part of our big day. It was a quiet, bucolic visit, full of sunshine and the lowing of the spotted cows roaming the pasture behind her tiny house. With the cows so close, I don't have to tell you that the air wasn't as fresh as the prairie grass and wildflowers, as far as the eye could see, let on. Despite the farm setting, Grandma wasn't much of a cook, so we ended up driving into town to, like, Earl's Cafe or something similar for dinner. When we returned to the house, everyone was hovering outside, remarking on the sunset. But I went inside to fetch the wedding tape and get it set up in the VCR. Bending down, I rifled through my bag, and when I stood up, standing before me was a gray mist in the basic shape of a human. I stumbled back, my eyes fixed on the ethereal form that hovered momentarily and then evaporated as the family filed into the house. What the hell, I thought. I'm losing my mind. I shoved the tape into my husband's hand and excused myself to the bathroom, where I sat on the edge of the giant clawfoot tub, tapping my foot on the cracked floor tiles, rationalizing what I'd just seen. After about 20 minutes, my husband knocked, asking if I was okay. Yeah, I said, I'll be out in a minute. By then, I'd convinced myself that what I'd seen was the sun reflecting through the dirty windows. I managed to calm down enough to face the family and aid my husband in narrating the video. While the wedding video played, the air in the room became thick, almost as if we were sitting in a vat of hair gel. And at various places in the tape where my husband spoke directly to the camera, a cool breeze blew across our faces. I felt downright bizarre. I couldn't get a full breath of air into my lungs, and my body on the exterior felt paralyzed, though my insides felt as if they'd spend the day riding a paint shaker at Home Depot. I said nothing, just kept my lips stretched in a stupid smile for appearances until the end of the tape when my husband asked his grandma, "So what did you think?" "It was nice, dear," she said, and immediately on the wall behind us, four distinct, deliberate knocks echoed her four words. Turning to my husband, I said, "Well, I'm pretty tired. We need to go." I scooped up my bag and tried my best not to run out of that house, not giving a rat's ass what the family thought. Somebody was there watching that video with us, an invisible someone who introduced himself to me as a swirling gray mist, and I wanted no part of it. Now, I'm not a crier, nor am I prone to displays of histrionic emotion. I'm a fairly even-keeled gal, but by the time my husband made it out to the car, I was damn near hyperventilating. It took the 20-minute drive back to town before I was able to explain to him, between gasps of breath and sobs, what I'd felt and seen in that room that night. I felt a bit more rational when he admitted the four knocks had startled him. He felt the cold breezes, and also thought the air in the room was thick and hazy. He said he thought he was losing his mind, but he didn't want to frighten me. Turns out I was the one to frighten him. I never met my father-in-law, so I'll never know if he was taking me to task for calling him out on his poor parenting skills, or if he was there, watching the video, a little bit late to the party, but there nonetheless.
Joshua Black is my guest this evening. The dead and dreams. What does this all mean? I'm just going to throw this out to you, and I know you're trying to be polite and nice about all of this, Joshua, but in your honest opinion, do you really believe that people are communicating with the souls of dead loved ones, or are we communicating with memories that we hold of our dead loved ones?
Yeah, it's interesting. I'll say they're more than memories, because a lot of people will have dreams of their deceased, even pets, and they've always seen them unhealthy. And in the dream, they're healthy. And so it's not a memory because they've never actually seen them healthy before. But personally, I believe with like just my own experience, I do believe that, you know, some of these dreams are visitation dreams. And, you know, and the stuff I hear, it really sort of, I think, speaks that too, because I can share a bunch of paranormal dreams that will help, I guess, like, understand it, I think, a little bit more. You want me to share a couple?
No, we're a paranormal show. We don't want to hear that. But do you have any stories about puppies and kittens? No, give me some of your best. Yeah, we want the paranormal. Bring it on.
All right. Okay, so here's one when it comes to a lot of people talk about knowing the deceased was going to die prior. And so they'll have this dream that is like a dream you'd have after you found out someone has died. So it's very comforting. They come back, they say, you know, that they love them and all that sort of stuff. And so anyways, these people will have these dreams where they don't know the person's died yet, but yet they're having this dream where the deceased is coming and saying that, you know, they love them and, you know, like everything's going to be okay. And they wake up and they're like, what? Like, did they just die? And then they get a phone call soon after that the person is dead. And so here's one where a lot of times I get it. It's like soon after. This was a couple months before. So here's one. I went down to the basement to take a shower. As I was walking towards the shower, I turned around and my daughter, deceased, and her boyfriend were standing there by the basement door. I asked her, "What are you doing here?" She said her boyfriend came to say goodbye. I said, "Goodbye? Where are you going?" My daughter said, "He has to go to school like me." I said, "Aren't you finished with school yet?" "No, Mom. It is just like it is here. You go to school, you learn something, and then you move on to another school and learn something more." I said, "Okay." And the boyfriend gave me a hug and said goodbye, and they left. The boyfriend was still living at the time. And what happened was 2 months later, the boyfriend died. And so it really speaks to this.
So 2 months later, now yeah. You're getting into something that I'm intrigued in talking about as well. Not that the rest hasn't been intriguing, Joshua, but all right. Yeah. So there you've got
you've
what
heard
we
nothing
call,
yet, Dave.
All right, good. No, we'll dig in. We'll dig in. But now this is starting to get into a whole new woo-woo, past the geef, because Dave's going deep kind of moment. So the whole aspect of dreams and what we're able to do, I'm starting to believe that we have more influence in our own lives through dreams and memory than we ever believed possible. I think that time travel does take place in dreams and in memory form. And I talk about this, and I'm going to throw this out at you, because here you're talking about something that was, in a sense, a precognitive dream. This kid wasn't sick. He wasn't dying slowly, right?
That's right.
But 2 months later, this kid is gone. So she was alerted to this. How did she know this? How did she know that was coming? All right. If time is not linear, especially in the spiritual world, Was the mom getting that dream closer to the date of the actual death? Did she have that dream at the time of death, and the dream was so powerful it resonated back to her that she recalls it at an earlier stage?
Oh, now you're going way deep. I have no idea.
Here. All right, hold on. Now, wait a second. The reason I mention this is I want you to think about, when we're talking about shows like The Mandela Effect. Are you familiar with The Mandela Effect?
No.
All right. It's these false memories that people have. The Berenstain or Berenstain Bears. Did Kit Kat have a hyphen between it, or was it always just Kit Kat? It's just silly things that we have these memories, vivid memories of, but things are off. Many people remember Nelson Mandela dying years before he actually died. So there's all of these weird inconsistencies. So I often wonder if our consciousness is jumping timelines. You must have at some point in your life, Joshua, a moment where you regret something you did direly, right? It changed the course of your life, whether it was an injury, something you said to somebody you loved, whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. And we spend how much of our time on something we regret running it over and over in our mind, thinking about it, laying there at night, unable to sleep, thinking, damn it, why didn't I ask that girl out? Why did I ask that girl out? Why didn't I go left instead of right? You know, why didn't I ask for that job? Or, you know, why did I say this? Why did I say that? And you're just kind of miserable about it. You're commiserating about it all the time, wallowing in it. And then you think back to the moment that that choice came to you. And there was that voice. And sometimes we have that voice in our consciousness that goes, I don't think you should do that, right? And we just kind of go, screw you, voice, right? It's the little devil on our shoulder, an angel on our shoulder. What if it's deeper than that? What if those moments when we're hearing the voice crying out, don't do this, do not do this, for God's sakes, don't do this, and then we veer off and we don't do that, how do we know that that wasn't our consciousness from the future coming back to us to help us avoid that mistake now?
Yeah, I think it's very hard to know. Is it, you could say that, or a lot of people like to say it's their deceased loved one, or it's God, or it's an angel, right? So there's a lot of, but yeah, I think it's very common to sort of hear that voice. And I think at the end of the day, you just have to be able to distinguish that voice. And that's the challenge, because you hear so many voices all throughout the day from your mind, and they all sound very similar. And as you get
Right, yeah, and I understand that. I'm a hyper anxiety kind of guy. I fight anxiety and depression quite a bit, so that I've always got that kind of nagging negative talk voice in my brain. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's the one that'll be like, dude, you do not stand a chance. Don't ask her out. You're going to make an asshole out of yourself. Get away. Run far, fast. You know what? Hey, I heard that there's a Nightmare on Elm Street marathon. Go home and watch that, right? Instead. So I have that voice, but I can tell the difference between my nagging anxiety, self-conscious voice, and sometimes when I've got that strong, powerful voice in my head that seems to be my own saying, no, God, no, don't do this. Yeah. And then sometimes I'm like, dude, stop overthinking it, just do it. And then it turns out to be a train wreck. And I sit there thinking, damn it, why didn't I listen to myself? And I often wonder if in those moments we are sending that message back. And dreams seem to be the most probable or possible way to do that, in those moments of consciousness going in and out of sleep, and then in the dream state. If we're able to communicate with people that have passed over, then time truly does not matter, right? Because in some cases, right, to the spirit, we're still grieving somebody that died a week ago or a month ago or a year ago. To them, it may have been a lot longer, or it may have been, you know, a second ago.
Yeah.
So, and that's what we hear a lot from our listeners, is that they'll have these moments where the spirits feel like, you know, well, God, I've been here. I feel like I've been here 100 years. And in some cases they're like, well, I just died. Well, but no, you died 3 months ago. You know, why haven't you come to me sooner? Because their consciousness hasn't caught up or whatever. So I don't know. Like I said, this is just a working theory that I apparently have burned most of my brain cells out on, in deep moments of weed reflection.
Yeah, and then like you can go even deeper. Like, I know there is a saint, Neem Karoli Baba, who says guru, God, and self are the same thing. So, you know, like, what is it that is telling us? You know, like, is it, you know, like, what truly is that? And I think it's very hard to figure that out, but if you can trust it, I think that's the game. And, you know, by playing that game, by trusting sort of this thing you can't see or you're just sort of feeling or you're hearing, and you're watching it and it works, things start working out. Well, then what's going on? And who is this, right? Is this me? Is this truly me, like a deeper part of me? You call it your own soul. You know, maybe it's your soul that knows everything, and it's just you're trying to get through to the mind, who is controlled, you know, largely by the ego. So, you know, it's just, it's fascinating. Yeah, like human behavior and just this world and the mysteries of life. And I think that's why I love this topic so much, because I never get bored with the dreams I hear. You know, there's just so many that you're just like, wait, what's going on? Like, this is something so weird. So here's another dream. I'll share it to you. Actually, you know what? I'm going to share something else. So when it comes to these...
I'll let you share them both. How about that?
All right.
That's beautiful. I'm a giving guy.
You are? That's amazing. All right. So we talked about prior to, you know, so someone's death prior, like the precog. Sometimes people get information after the fact. So let's say there's a will that needs to be found. They can't find it. They'll sometimes have a dream where the deceased shows them where it is. I remember this one individual shared a dream with me, and her father was getting sued, and he died, I guess, right before he got sued. And they had to go to court, you know, a couple months after or something. And this woman had to go to court instead because the father's dead. Anyways, she couldn't find the documents to basically win the court case. And so she was panicking. And then all of a sudden, she had this dream. And in the dream, she was in this storage locker, and she saw her father over by this barrel. And he picks up this coat that's on top of the barrel and shows it to her. And then she wakes up. Well, doesn't she go there the next morning? The coat's there. She picks it up. All the paperwork she needs to win the case is underneath. And she actually wins the case. And so, like, she would claim that she actually didn't know where it was. And same with the will or money, sometimes they'll say they find in weird places because the deceased shows them that that's where they hid it. And you're just like, wait a second. Like, that's something they didn't know, right? They're claiming they didn't know this, but yet they're given that information from sort of their loved one that passed away. And I think that's just fascinating.
It is, right. You're getting detailed information. And again, who's transmitting that information?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it, you know, on the other side, then you can also think, if we're going to look at the skeptical angle on this, Joshua, that maybe you saw it there at one point and your brain has just been weeding and weeding and weeding through memory after memory after memory, trying to peel back those layers of the onion till it got to the right memory of where was that item that I saw?
Absolutely true. And all it can go by is what they say, right? Like, so if they forget, they forget. But they claim that they had no idea. So, you know, you go with this stuff and it's just like this, it piles on this sort of, you could say, evidence, or just piles on to the mystery of what's going on in these dreams. And I'll give you another one. So here's a dream of basically two people sharing a similar dream. And so this is a daughter that lost her father. So this dream was about my father. We talked in the dream about him and my mom, and that she needs him to come to her in the night and hug her and let her know that he is okay and is there. All right. So the daughter has this dream, totally different. The daughter is telling the deceased to go to the mom, right? Very interesting. Anyways, the next morning, the mom calls the daughter. And she thought she'd think she was crazy, but she told the mom told the daughter that she actually talked to dad in the dream last night, and that dad hugged her and told her that he loved her. And then the daughter sort of said that she told dad to do that, and of course they both cried. But I think that's phenomenal how these dreams are rare enough, but for two people to have dreams that mimic sort of the one dream to the other is fascinating.
I agree.
Absolutely fascinating.
And,
yeah.
And that was my other aspect, going back down into my smoke-filled rabbit hole, right, is if we can communicate with the dead and we can do this and then they can interject into other dreams, are we able to telegraph these messages? And if the ghost or the spirit has no linear law that they need to follow, can they visit us, much like your first story told us, where the boy and his girlfriend came back, visited with the mom, even though the boy hadn't passed yet. Right. So it's that weird time loop deal. So if you're teaching people how they can remember their dreams, be more a part of their dreams, do you believe we can control our dreams? And if so, how I want to work with you on this. Seriously, I think a study like this needs to be done, Joshua. And maybe you're getting to the point where now you want to have a real life and not worry about this. But I would love to see about transmitting messages via the dead in these dreams. You know, Mom, thank you for being here. Thank you for telling me this. You know, I need you to tell me that. I need you to go back and tell me this when I was 20, or I need you to do this. And see if that ripple effect can be felt. And I know that's going to sound weird, but why can't we? I mean, listen, if they're making themselves known to us and they truly are an energetic form, whether you believe it's a spirit, a concept, a tulpa, or a, you know, a mere creation of our dream, why can't we telegraph back through our own memories these moments, these thoughts? It seems like that would be right. We're a self-contained communication device. We're always absorbing, witnessing, seeing, and storing information that we can call upon later. And in some of the hauntings that we deal with, I believe that we're not necessarily being haunted by the past, but perhaps by the people that will be living in the house 20 years from now.
And that's very interesting.
Right? Yeah. Why is it a linear fashion? Quantum physics tells us that's not how time works. So for us to believe that it automatically is just coming from the past, that doesn't make sense. Right? There should be ripples that are felt forward and backward. So why wouldn't the ripple of an effect that took place in my house 10 years from now when we've moved out, but the neighbor came in and shot to death the two owners in this house? They've impacted this area, this place. That ripple effect, you would think, especially if it's traumatic, should reach backwards as well as forward in time. It's a traumatic moment. Yeah. So dreams, you would see consciousness, if we can expand beyond the regular consciousness, if we can start to grasp and grapple, people believe in lucid dreams and controlling their dreams. This would seem like the next evolution for us to examine is then let's begin sending these messages. And how do we know that's – look at how many of these amazing artists have gotten their information from dreams.
Yeah.
Musicians that wake up and hear a song and something and they transmit it and boom, the song becomes a huge hit. Stephanie Meyer, lover or hater, she had a dream about a sparkly vampire. And it launched a revolution. And you know, you can bitch and whine as much as you want that she made Vampire Sparkle. It made my children read again. They picked up books and they read and their imagination was captured. I don't care how you do it. That was an amazing deal. And it was triggered by a dream. So there is information. And if you learn how to read the information that's being given to you in that, how do we know that's not something that she sat there thinking about for years and years and years and wishing she would have done something with that? And then that reflection, that ripple in the pond just kept getting bigger and bigger back in time to finally where it triggers her to write it instead of just sitting there thinking about it.
Yeah, but the issue is it'd be so hard to test scientifically, right? Because even if you did get something, you'd never know, right? Like,
not necessarily, because if you can transmit messages,
right? Like, you would know.
But if you can transmit, if I can tell my mom tonight, talk to Joshua Black, Mom, make an appearance to Joshua Black and just smile and hold out a rose for him. And I'm going to tell you, Joshua, you know, hey, I'm going to try to do something this week. I want you to, you know, I'm not going to tell you what it is, but I'm going to try to send you a message. If you see somebody suddenly pop up in your dream that makes no sense to you, which let's face it, we have dreams like that all the time. This goofy old lady with an aluminum foil hat holds out a red rose to you, that, you know, that might stick out to you. So you report back, okay, Dave, I got to say, the only weird thing that I would say would fit would be that earlier this week I saw a woman in tie-dye standing on the corner during my dream and she held out a rose.
Yeah.
All right. Well, look, Mom did it even better. She didn't do the aluminum foil hat. She wore tie-dye, which I picked on her about all the time. That was the way to cue you and not be –
I see what you're saying.
Right. So then it's not me transmitting the message.
Yeah, I thought you were talking about transmitting – message to the deceased to transmit to yourself, you know.
Well, we could do that, right?
You know, but like the whole,
right? We could do that as well. I'm saying that should be available as well. If we can start proving that we can have shared dreams and we can communicate and have spirits carry the message from one person to another, then why can't we you know, why wouldn't we at least start to entertain the idea of sending messages back? And that part may not be easily scientifically researched and validated, but you can prove one part of the aspect, the communication between me sending a message through my dead mother to you, and you get that message, then that should start to open up paradigms that there is a lot more possibilities in hand.
Oh, definitely, definitely. So, like, but you know, at the end of the day, you have to like understand where the culture is at right now when it comes to the research. I think that's something we definitely could do. I think especially in maybe 5-10 years when we can actually see the dreams, because there's so many dreams we can't remember. But if you can record your dreams, it'd be so much easier to get that validation, because you, a lot of people might have had that dream, right? Like, so maybe your mom may contact me, but I may not remember it. And so therefore we say it didn't happen, but maybe it did, but we just don't know. But I can see in 10 years, we'll be able to see what we've dreamt in the night, and that have its own sort of, I think, new breakthrough, and you'd be able to do this stuff.
What do you mean? Do you believe that we're coming to that point where we're going to be able to start recording dreams?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, they've already been playing around with the idea of trying to figure out what people are dreaming in the sleep lab, and they found some preliminary results that actually are pretty promising. So they, you know, like they map your sort of how your brain looks when you, let's say, look at a car versus a truck and a puppy. And then if those, you know, those neurons light up, what happens in the while you're dreaming, they'll wake you up and say, what are you dreaming about? And there's a high correlation between if there's a car, right? So if it says the computer's saying like they're probably dreaming about a car, and then they have those neurons light up, and like they're like, oh, okay, and they are dreaming about a car. The issue is they don't know how it all fits together. So if there's a car and a puppy, is the puppy driving a car? Is it, you know, the puppy on the side of the road and someone, you know, so you don't really know the story yet. But they started to actually play with this, and that's why I'm saying with technology now and how where we're going with the iPhone and stuff and VR, virtual reality, like 10 years, I can't see it not being impossible. You know, like, so I'm really looking forward to that, because it's going to change the way we look at dreams and be able to capture these dreams. So like these dreams of, you know, of the deceased that people want, and what happens if they are having them? And then they can go back and actually sort of say, oh, wow, I did have that dream. And actually,
well, I think we need to start focusing on building that neural transmitter for ourselves. I think, you know, thinking that we're going to send one message isn't going to work. This is going to take, you know, months of you and I focusing every night. I'm going to send you a message, and it's going to come in dream form tonight. And then every day we communicate, you know, once you start training, it's got to be like any other muscle. And we know the mind is powerful. Look at, man, you can send messages, right? How many times? I just had this happen recently. A friend of mine that I loved so dearly in high school was such a great spirit and soul. And we started to connect about 5 years ago, 6 years ago, and then life got in the way. And then all of a sudden, I had this overwhelming need to reach out to him. And I called, and I tried every way I could find. Social media, old email addresses, phone numbers I found online. Nothing connected. Nothing went through. And then a few days later, I get a message from his sister that says, hey, I thought you should know Walter passed away last night. He had cancer and never told any of us that he had it.
Wow.
So he was transmitting something, man, before he left, because this came on like a storm front. I knew I needed, and I couldn't tell why. I didn't get the dread feeling of, oh, death is coming. I just thought, I need to connect with Wally bad. I need to talk to him. And I spent the better part of a day and a half trying to find a way to contact him. And, and it just, I missed the opportunity, but it's there. And you hear these precognitive dreams, you hear of these messages, you know, ghosts have come to people and said in dream state, you know, don't go to TGI Fridays this weekend. Don't go, stay home. And you end up staying home, and then you find out there was a mass shooting there. Right? Or you don't get on the plane because you had a dream about your mom the night before waving you off at the plane. You don't get on it, and it crashes into the World Trade Center. You know, there were people's lives that were saved because of dreams and precognitive moments before that, those tragedies took place. And they're documented. They're out there. So to me, it just seems like, you know, if we start building and working that muscle like you did, you started working the muscle and building it, and now you remember more and more dreams. So it would only, I think, and maybe I'm wrong, but I would think once we start – building that ability to remember dreams, then we start building the ability to transmit through those dreams. It's going to take a while, but I think we're not that far removed. Once we get out of our own way, we should be able to communicate with ourselves or others through dream form.
Yeah, yeah. Like I say, like it's I can't say it's impossible. And I think, yeah, like as we move forward, and we can do the research and we get the funding to be able to do something like that, that'd be amazing, right? And it's just, you know, like you need the time, you need the money, you need the lab, and all that stuff is, it requires finances.
Tell me honestly, Joshua, when you hang up the phone, are you going to tell your buddy and go, America, that medical marijuana is just screwing with their brains over there, man?
No, I just think that you have such a large goal on what's possible for humans. And I think with all the stories you've shared, I think that's amazing because a lot of people live in a world that's more confined. And you just think like very further outside the box.
How can we not believe that we are capable? There are stories of people levitating and taking flight, not in front of one or two drunk friends at a party, but in front of congregations of thousands and tens of thousands. People have floated. People have flown. And this isn't one or two. This is hundreds of circumstances and evidence that this takes place. We've transmitted messages. We've remote viewed. We've been able to pinpoint locations and imagery accurately using nothing but our mind and stretching past our consciousness. We as a people in the world have dumbed ourselves down so much, and we bought into the line of bullshit that we are limited. We aren't limited.
Yeah. Yeah.
We need to stop buying into that rhetoric and start believing that we are capable of so much more. And that we have these abilities within us. And if you're religious in nature and you grew up with a religious background, in the Bible it says you can do these things as well, right? The difference is Jesus believed in himself. Moses believed in himself. Noah believed in himself. Well, these are all parables, but the parable is believe in yourself, right? Open up to these possibilities, and I think the ghosts will make themselves known. We will see aliens. You know, I'm so stressed out by the people that, this hippy-dippy bullshit of, well, once we're ready, the aliens will make themselves known to the world, Dave. And, you know, once we can treat environment right, Bigfoot will come help us. To me, that sounds like the biggest hippy-dippy load of crap, but maybe what it's coming down to is we need to train the muscle to see and hear the message in order for them to be heard. And if we're not listening because we're so involved in our pettiness and jealousy and anger and hatred toward one another and our electronic devices and how can I be better than my neighbor instead of taking time to work with one another, that's really what's muting our brains and our abilities, in my humble opinion.
Yeah, no, it's interesting because like you talk about Jesus and saints, like I know some Hindu saints like Neem Karoli Baba, and like, I don't know if you know Ram Dass, but that was his guru. And anyways, he did like these feats that no human should be able to do. He even made himself appear and disappear, and he could blind himself from other people. So as you're saying, like, you know, when it comes to aliens or whatnot, maybe just like we're just not ready to see them just because we're not ready. And I think it goes back to my goal. And my goal has always sort of been, like, from looking at these dreams, is how can I learn to believe in myself more, love myself more? Because I think if you can unlock that, then you can reach these higher potentials of the brain and human body. But, like, I think that should be the goal. And I think, you know, our culture is so counterproductive towards that because, like I said, like, the culture is telling you all the things you need to feel loved or the things you need to do to be valued. But if you can get to a place where you love yourself despite what's going on around you, like a truthful love, that maybe these things just happen. You know, maybe these things that, you know, you talk about just occur because, you know, what else is there what can the body do when you actually love itself? Like, when you're not filling it with toxins, you know, like the body is a beautiful machine. And you hear these people how, you know, a lot of these saints, how like they can live a long time. They can do these sort of crazy things. And the common thread among all of them is that they have this sort of love that you don't find in just, you know, normal people, just because they've trained their mind in a way to be able to be relaxed and still and non-judgmental. So I think, you know, like with all the stuff that you could do and all the like technology we can get, I think the key is to love, to be able to love yourself, look in the mirror and be able to, you know, value who you are And I think if you can get there, well, then, you know, like, I think something else can come from that.
Right. Well, value who you are and start. And listen, you can't value yourself if you don't value others as well.
You just have to
start treating people nice. Do good things and be nice, and the world will change. Whether you believe it or not, people, give it a shot. Spend the next 60 days going out of your way being nice and just doing good things, whether people deserve it or not. And I guarantee you, your world will change. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's the bald hippie in me, but
I'm
believing it more and more. The more I see and the more I hear and the more people share their wonderful experiences with me and the experiences I've had. And, you know, you and I were talking off air. You were surprised about the dream that I had with my grandfather. And my grandfather gave me the ability, and you said a lot of these people will get the gift of visitation, and then they'll get the gift of asking questions, but they're never given the gift to remember what the answers are. My grandfather gifted me with the whole enchilada, and I had some stupid-ass questions. But but the majority, what the main message that came through was that where they are, where we go next, is just love. It's not ownership. It's not ego. It's not... there's no time for anything else. It's just love. You're all there together in a place of love, no ownership. And that was the main message. And you know what? We're never going to see that on this planet. We're a warring, hateful, shithead country and world. That's just who we are. We can start to make subtle differences and in our circles and in our lives. And eventually I think that that wave can take place, but it's like erosion. It's going to take decades and centuries of people doing the right thing before we start to see it. Don't throw your hands up and say, well, it won't happen in my lifetime, so I'll just throw this garbage in the ocean, right?
Yeah.
Because we're learning that that's not really the way. It's happening in our lifetime. The negativity is. So why can't we just, you know, start to and posit the positivity and the love to send out there? And this is the time of year and the way to do this. And you know what? Maybe that's part of what has been the huge boundary keeping me from my mom in dream visitation or any kind of spiritual interaction. You know, I feel that my connection with my long lost daughter, I never knew existed. I believe firmly my mother had a hand in that, but I have not had the profound one-on-one dream with my mother or a phone call or, you know, a moment that other people share with these paranormal incidents. And, you know, I've had a lot of people tell me it's because you're getting in your own way. You're so locked up in your grief and you're so upset about the loss that you're not able yet. And it sounds counterproductive, right? Counterintuitive. Well, it's because of that that I'm feeling this way. And if I just had the message and I had her come through, I would feel better. So it's kind of this, you know, at some point in the finger cuffs, right? Chinese finger cuffs, when you're pulling from both directions, nothing's going to happen. It's going to take you to relax both hands and push them together slowly. That's when it loosens up and you can release yourself. And maybe that's exactly what we need to do, is stop pulling, stop fighting, just let things come together again, and that's when things will loosen up and connections will be made spiritually, physically, in this world and in this realm. And maybe that's when we'll start experiencing people, creatures like Bigfoot, you know. And I laugh. I'm not an outdoorsman. Outdoorsy people seem to experience Bigfoot more often. Maybe that's because they are in love with that and in tune with that, and that's why they are gifted with the ability to see. I saw Bigfoot, I believe, when I was a kid, when I was open and liked the outdoors. I don't anymore, and I'll never see. Well, of course, I have to go outside to see something, but you know, it's just, I think that there's a lot to the way consciousness works and reacts, and it's the way we perceive things that hold us back from getting where we need to go next.
Definitely. I definitely believe that. And I think that's one of the things I'm finding in these dreams. If you look at sort of one of the common themes when it comes to these grief dreams, the deceased is telling them that they love them, right? So love is such a prominent thing in these dreams that they get. And it which is fascinating, because when you look at that, they could say anything, but they keep saying that they love them. And you have to wonder why, right? Like, why is that? And in grief, you know, one of the big things that we're dealing with is this, you know, this lack of love that's coming, that got taken away from us, because we view other people externally as sort of love beacons, right? They tell us that I'm good enough. They tell us that I'm okay or I'm worth it. And so when they die, like a spouse or a friend or a parent, what happens is now you're feeling a sort of love deprivation, like you're lacking something now because you have to love yourself. And I think what these dreams are saying is trying to give them that extra love again, right? Because it's something they're longing for. But it speaks to the bigger truth that you're just talking about, how we need to love ourselves more. And we can't sort of put all of who we are in other people's hands to say if we're good or not. Like, you have to believe in yourself. And, like, once you get there, I can only imagine what happens as we move forward. But, like, the dreams are showing that, right? It's a common, huge common trend. And, like, you're seeing that in your own way. Yeah, like, and with your mom, she'll come in time, you know, and, you know, the desire is, you know, why do you need to see her? And I think that's the question. Because if your grandfather came, so you already have this truth that he's there with all the deceased, like, so what do you have a worry? And so these are the questions, because sometimes when we want stuff, we don't really question why. And then when we question it, we can understand what's driving that. And then if it's, right? And like I said, like, if it's not, if she's okay, because you probably know that, because I'm guessing she was a loving person. Like, right. Where else would she be, right?
And that makes sense, because that's exactly, and maybe this is the words I needed to hear, because in my realm, I still want, you're right, we've got to get past that want and need and desire. And the thing was, we had a great loving relationship. We never left anything on the table. Mm. So she, you know, there's nothing left to be said. And yeah. You're right. I was given the information from my grandfather. I shouldn't need to do it. And that's what I always encourage people. Make the best of the time you have now, because you never know when that life around you is going to end. And instead of it being, oh, shit, now I need to know if they love me and forgive me. Find out now. Do it right now. Ask for forgiveness now. Show love. Tell somebody you love them that you've wanted to and you haven't, because, well, you're the tough guy and you don't say that, or you're the strong as nails woman who doesn't need to, you know, say those words. Say it now, so that you're not left after a tragedy needing to hear those words, needing to say those words. And if you say it now, we get it out now, then we're God, it can only be a better place. Yeah, we can only be in a better place.
It's very true. And you say a lot of the dreams do help people, you know, or a lot of the negative dreams too, reflect that guilt or that, you know, that they have of not being able to say goodbye or whatnot, or doing something bad or wrong to them. But so it's, yeah, so it's just understanding sort of what is it that, you know, that desire is coming from. And if it's from because a lot of times the ego likes to trick you and it puts you on a wild goose chase. And what happens is you become more, you know, you become worried, or you become less of, like, you know, what's going on? Like, how come I'm not remembering one? And where is she? And all that sort of stuff. If you can just settle down, I wouldn't doubt it if you even have one. You know, like, once you realize what is the truth about it, what is it that you want to have? And if you calm your feelings of all the other, you know, worries and stuff, and you sit with that, I wouldn't doubt if it can creep up, because now you've pinpointed where you are and what you're longing for. And that in itself is a very powerful feeling. But a lot of times we just, like, we have a desire, but we don't question it. And then, but that desire is filled with so many things. And by sitting back down, you're actually telling yourself too, I want a dream of this, right? Of this type. You don't need to tell me you're okay, because I know that. But I want this, or I want that, right? So I think, you know, like, who knows, like, in the next couple months, you know, like, what happens with you. But if you just, like, really sit down today or whatever and really think about that with the dream of your grandfather and say, okay, what would I need to have? And if the answer is you don't need anything, well, then that's a very interesting feeling. So then it's just like, you know, come when you may. And I'll appreciate that when it does happen.
I like it. Sounds like a solid plan to me, Joshua. All right. Now tell me this.
Excellent.
Talking about creeping up, we've got just a little bit of time left, a few more minutes. People always love the creepier, weird stories at the end of the show, because it's when they're going to bed, or they're just, you know, they're out walking the dog. Now they felt safe and lured in by our love and our hippie vibe that we were putting out. Now talk to me about a couple of the creepier dreams that you've been told about and, or may have had yourself. You've got to have one or two.
What do you mean creepy? Like, like negative?
Yeah, or weird. Like, yeah, I want to know what some of the creepiest dreams that people have ever related to you. There's got to be one or two good ones out there.
I say, like, the paranormal. I love the paranormal ones. But when it comes to the negative dreams, I could talk about those. I guess we haven't done that yet. So here's one. Where is it? So a lady Hold on, I'll get it.
I didn't mean to throw you for a line. I know we were all kumbaya and hugging and drinking.
Yeah, I know. But
drinking,
hey,
the wine together.
No, but then you want to get right to the negative stuff. All right, so here's a dream a woman had after her husband passed away. And so I asked him where he has been. He told, and why he made me think that he has been dead all this time. I get angrier and angrier as he tells me that he faked his death, and it was just all a plan to get the money from the business and insurance. And then now that he had And it was all just a plan to get the money from the business insurance. And now that he wants to resume our relationship again, I tell him that I've moved on in my life and that I am now in a new relationship and I'm happy. I tell him I can't go back in time and be with him again. He gets angry and angry and tells me that the real reason he is back is because he wants all the money that I inherited. That if I give it back to him, he'll leave me alone. I get very upset telling him that he is a terrible, heartless, mean person, do something like that to me, to make me think he was dead when all this time he was hiding somewhere. As he goes on, he becomes more menacing, threatening to harm me and my partner. So this woman had this dream. She thought it was a negative visitation, right? So she thought she was being haunted by her husband. And she was so perplexed because for her, he was such a loving person. So it was very out of character. So like she thought something was like really wrong with him. And, you know, she was having her own issues. But then when we actually talked about it, it actually, there's a glaring thing in that, and it was this money. And so when asked about the money, what happens is the woman says that the thing that bothers me the most is the money. In the dream, he tells me that it's his money and that I don't deserve it. When I wake up from the dream, that's one thing that stays with me, and somehow I don't feel worthy of the money, and that he had to die for me to have it, and he had to work so hard. And so you can actually see in the dream, it's not really a haunting. It's actually reflecting of the woman's issues in waking life. And her issues are first that she has this money that she doesn't feel she deserves because the husband worked so hard for it. And also the start of the new relationship that she probably feels kind of guilty over, that she's maybe spending the money on the new relationship too. But also it's how hard it is to start to love two people at the same time, right? Like, it's so difficult because when someone dies, it's not like the love goes away, and then you're trying to start and love this new relationship. And so you see these complications in her own waking life, and it's actually what fueled that dream. And so I like to sort of say, like, when you work on that stuff, then you'll get those positive dreams afterwards. And the research is showing, actually, that people who have negative dreams will also have these positive dreams also. So it's a scary dream for the person, but when you talk to it, and when I heard this dream and could understand it, well, those people will then have a more positive understanding of the dream, and it won't scare them, because the last thing I want for someone to do is be afraid to go to bed. We need our sleep, and we need our sleep to grieve. So if you're having a negative dream, if that's, you know, people are, you know, if one of those listeners have a negative dream, don't fret, you know, feel free to email me and we can talk about it. But it usually has something to do with your waking day life, and it's not, you know, they're okay. You know, like, don't, you know, like, I haven't seen any dream so far that, you know, speaks to the difference. Because every time it's a negative dream, it has something to do with guilt, regret, something like that, that they need to work on, that they haven't been in waking life.
Good stuff. Joshua, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your insights and studies with us. We appreciate it.
No problem. If I just have a quick moment to shout out the Grief Dreams podcast.
Yes, please.
Yeah, just because I think it's if you love hearing about this topic and these dreams, please go on that and look us up. And we also have the Grief Dreams Facebook group. We have almost 1,000 members in that group. So please go to that, check it out, and you know, you can share your own dreams. I love hearing about them and comment on other people's. So that's good. And always the website. So if you want to know more about the research I'm doing at Brock, I'll be done in a year. I'll be a doctor by then. So this is actually really exciting. And all my research and publications go up there. So if you want to keep tabs on what I'm doing, that's the place to go.
Joshua Black, soon to be Dr. Joshua Black, thank you so much for joining us. Have a great rest of your night. And for all of you out there listening, take time this weekend to reconnect. Tell people how you feel. Give them the love, give them the forgiveness, and begin forgiving yourself and showing yourself love as well. We make the change. We start with ourselves. We'll be back with you again next week with more of the best in Paranormal Talk Radio. For Tim Dennis, I'm Dave Schrader, and this is Beyond the Darkness.